Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, Baylor's favorite son, Matthew Pallage, is coming back.
It's a good thing. I kind of thought that as he's named as the new defensive coordinator, replacing Ron Roberts, who was fired about a month ago, it's a good thing because the fact that Matthew knows the program, knows the defense, it's not going to change very much under what Dave Aranda had built and what he believes in, that sort of thing. I think that with Pallage having a co-defensive coordinator's position at Oregon like he did for the 2022 season, kind of gave him a sense as to how to run an entire side of the field. And now that he's got that year under his belt, I think it's going to make a big difference for him in his growth as a head coach. He's only 35. I've had a lot of high expectations for Matthew Pallage ever since I got to meet him a little bit a couple of years ago when he came over in 2020. And I personally think, Stephen, that he's a guy that's a head coach in the making sometime in his future.
When you think about Roberts going from being so popular last year to getting fired this year, it goes back to the thing you talked about.
Yeah.
It's amazing how good you look when you have two NFL quality guys in your backfield.
Yeah. Well, you have, when you look at your secondary, like Baylor had, and primarily the safeties, if you look at Jaron McVay, Jalen Petrie, JT Woods, Baylor's defense collected 19 interceptions in 2021. Those three that I just mentioned had 11 of them. And that kind of tells you what your safeties play can look like under getting back to what Matthew Pallage can do. Now, Jalen Petrie could be one of those once-in-a-program lifetime type of guys that'll be very hard to replace forever, if you will. Those are just, it's always a great thing to have them come along. And then when you think that you can just automatically replace somebody like that, it's really hard. But I will say this, with Pallage, you'll see a little bit more aggressiveness in the secondary for the 2023 season. You had some young cornerbacks that really took a beating last year with Lorando Johnson, Snacks Johnson, A.J. McCarty, to name a few. Mark Milton took it as well, but he's not returning, so he's gone. But I think that what this will happen is that the secondary, we all know, had a lot of issues. And I think that's where Pallage can return and bring something back to those guys. As much as they got chewed up during the course of the 2022 season, have that year of experience under their belt so they can understand and make the adjustments to what it's going to be like to be better for the 2023 season. At least you would like to think so. And I think you bring up I think there's just a change in personalities. There's, 20 some odd years difference between Pallage and Ron Roberts. I think Ron had kind of become crusty and unpopular with players, which, whether we like it or not, that's kind of the way it is. Today in football, you've got to have a guy that's respected and liked. The things that I had heard about Roberts was he wasn't very well liked in the locker room by defensive players. And my counter to that was, I don't really care if my coach, position coach or coordinator or head coach is to be like, it matters, of course. But the thing is, do you respect him? And that's the bigger factor here. And I don't know if that kind of started to fizzle during the course of the 2022 season. I mean, the results would suggest that something obviously went awry or whatever. And maybe Ron just got too old school for his, and was over his skis in terms of that part of it. And with Pallage, he's kind of a new age type of defensive coach who knows how to appeal to younger people. He's only twice their age, if you will. He's, like I said, 35. A lot of these guys that are coming are 18, 19 years old. The older ones are going to be 22, 23. So there's not going to be that huge age gap. And the fact that some of these guys that are coming through the program are familiar with him and he's familiar with them, and so he can understand what they can do to make it work or try and improve things. So I think by the time that Matthew gets down here and gets settled in, which he probably is in the process of doing, will make a difference. And, of course, there's two things that Baylor really needs to do better. So obviously their pass defense needs to improve, and they just got to keep people out of the end zone. I mean, they were so bad, basically starting with the Oklahoma State – well, basically starting with the OU game on November 3rd, or November 5th, rather. They gave up, Stephen, between Oklahoma, Kansas State, TCU, Texas, and then the bowl game against Air Force. They gave up an average of 30 points a game. And that's just not going to – and I think the number was 31 points a game if you go all the way back to Oklahoma State. So that just shows you that if you can't keep people out of the end zone, you're asking for it.
Yeah, and what you mentioned on Roberts being kind of the older, crustier guy, this is something that's going to be, I think, even more important. In these days of NIL, these players can, you know, they can pick up their dolly and dishes and walk off at any point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't used to be like that. And I think you're going to see a huge change in terms of how coaches have to interact with these players. The old crusty football coach that's really mean, that may not work anymore.
I don't think it does anymore. No, I think it's pretty much run its course. I mean, to use a basketball example, if you had Bob Knight trying to coach basketball at this day and age, he'd be run out of the building fast. He wouldn't last more than three seasons if that. That's just kind of the way it is. Now, what you have to have is you have to be sound in your coaching technique, your communication with your players. You know, you can challenge, you know, instead of, you know, we used the phrase back in yours and my day when we were both younger, we're saying, you know, where players were getting their tails chewed for X, Y, and Z reasons. The phraseology has been changed to where they're now being challenged. It doesn't really matter how it's being phrased or whatever. But players need to be challenged, and they need to be pushed, and they need to be kind of chewed out a little bit, because there's a fine line that you've got to hold in terms of players being able to compete and work and to get to a higher level. And sometimes coaches always have to pick their moments of when to be positive reinforcement and sometimes when to get on them and say, look, guys, this isn't working here. You need to figure this out. Why aren't you doing this? Because it's a two-way street in that relationship. The coaches can get on you and teach the fundamentals and tell you how to make adjustments, but it's also the responsibility of the player to do his own work and make himself better. And that doesn't matter, and that goes beyond, you know, work on the field, work in the film room, and work on just simple technique things, just on his own time.
And they're also bringing in Christian Robinson, coached for Auburn last year. And this is part of that youth movement. He's under 35. His first year as a full coach was 2018.
Yeah. And I think from that perspective, you look at a guy like that where now you see where all the position groups are changing, where you have Powell, who was handled with the safeties when he was at Baylor. And, of course, Ronnie Wheat was the former safeties coach before he got fired. Along with Ron Roberts. So the way this is going to work, and Ron Roberts was coaching the linebackers, so it all kind of comes together here where, Robinson will take Roberts' spot in terms of the position group, and then Powell will take the safeties where obviously Ronnie Wheat was. Now, the only thing that's left to be determined is how the special teams will be divided up. Is that going to be divided up between coaches? Sometimes that happens. Is there going to be a full coach devoted to that? Would that be tacked on to Powell's job description? I can't see that, because when you're handling one side of the team with defense, it's really hard to focus on special teams. You got to get the defense right. So I don't know how Baylor's going to do that just yet. So we'll kind of have to wait and see how that evolves. Maybe they hire, you only fire two coaches and you hire two coaches. So now the question is going to be is how the special teams are going to be divided or kept within a coach, if a position coach will do it or not. We'll just have to wait and see how that all works out.
Yeah, and it's kind of crazy how much the perception of a team can change in one year.
Yeah.
And let's face it, Baylor's personality this year was 180 from what it was last year.
I never thought the season was the same after the loss at West Virginia. When they, they were coming off that bye, when they lost to Oklahoma State, and everyone, and that was their second loss of the season. But when they lost that game in Morgantown, a game they were clearly better, a game that they had control of early, and they were about to get on top of it, and when that fizzled on them, I just thought that the whole season was basically going to go upside down, and it did.
Yeah, it was ugly. Now, as we go into next year, we're at the point, and we've already beaten this a little bit to death, but they got one scholarship quarterback, and according to our message boards, they'd be just as happy if we didn't have any scholarship quarterbacks right now, because they ain't happy with Chapin.
Well, they got to be happy with somebody there. And the issue is, is the fact that obviously Baylor's trying to mine the QB portal right now, part of the NCAA transfer portal, to see what options are available to them right now. And there's not a lot. I mean, I had some notes up earlier this week, and I'm kind of adding to them as we speak. You know, they made a run at Hudson Card, the Texas quarterback, and he wound up going to Purdue. They got in late on him. Luke Altmyer from Ole Miss, you know, they like him. I know that they've made contact with him. I don't know if that's going to fly because the fact it sounds like Illinois is involved there. You know, it's the thing that concerns me, and, of course, Tanner Mordecai could have been a perfect fit for them. Waco Midway kid from SMU who just got into the portal, even though he also declared for the draft. But all signs point to him going to Wisconsin. But this is going to go back to, Stephen, something that I've said on past podcasts about this. The thing that Baylor has to owe itself to, there's really two things here. Baylor's NIL, whatever that is, and how aggressive it is or how aggressive it isn't, is going to play a role in this because that's where quarterbacks are looking for is what is my NIL situation going to be at? And if I'm not going to get a healthy deal to come over to your school, then I'm not coming. Then the other thing is going to be is will I come to Baylor and will I have an honest chance to compete for the starting job with Blake Shapen? Because that should absolutely be promised. I've said this many times before. Blake Shapen should not be presumed as the starting quarterback in 2023. Certainly not the way he finished. I may be in the minority on that, but I'm just going to say this. If Baylor takes the attitude that there needs to be a guy that's going to be serving as the backup to Blake Shapen, then they've mishandled this again.
Well, you can't really. I just don't see you being able to do that. And it was absolutely. Shapen reminded me so much of Charlie Brewer last year in that he went from making these throws that were really impressive to just not being able to do anything.
You know what I think that really comes down to is I think it really comes down to maybe having the yips. Because you hear, I mean, I heard so many times during the course of basically since spring ball this year, that if you looked at Blake in practice, everything was looking clean, sharp, on target, at the whole nine yards. And then when it translates to the game, it doesn't translate to the game. And for whatever reason, it just wasn't happening. And I don't get it. Well, I mean, I do because you see players do that where they can be the best practice player of all time. And then when they get out there, when the lights are on and you're between the white lines and it means something, that it's a mentality thing. But, you know, I'm not trying to be like a Blake Shapen hater here. But what I'm trying to suggest here is that Blake knows he needs to be better. Everybody knows that. But he should not be coddled with this. He understands that the mistakes that he made and the way that he played basically from Oklahoma State through the end of the year is not going to cut it. And that's why your team finished 6-7 and out of the Big 12 race basically by the middle of the month. I mean, they were technically still in it when they lost to Kansas State, but we all know that when they lost to Kansas State, that was church. But at the same time, you just need better quarterback play. I do think that he can be better because – it's almost like anything else. You go from the one year to the next year, you should be trending up because you learn how to play the position, and it's an evolving thing. But that doesn't mean that he's entitled to be the starting quarterback, in my opinion. And I think that's going to be the issue that really has to be grasped. And you know, I think tackled by the Baylor coaches is how do you deal with this? Because there's been so many things talked about Blake's. Is he the guy that the Baylor coaching staff has hooked its wagon on and saying, we're going to ride with him and that's the way it is? Or are they going to say this is an open competition? And I think that's the question that Baylor's coaching staff has to deal with presently.
Yeah, and what you talked about on the lights, like last year, Shapen just kind of got thrown into the game and he didn't have time to think about it.
Right.
You know, it's like, hey, Jerry's hips out. Get in there. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of went in there and went blind. Now, also, nobody had any film on him.
Right.
So that makes a difference. But, you know, what you talk about with the lights, how many times have you gone out and watched, like, place kickers make, like, a 50, 55-yard field goal, you know, when it's practice or when, you know, it's like pregame warm-ups or something like that, and they get in the game, and that's a whole different animal.
Yeah, it's kind of like baseball pitchers, you know, when they're going through a bull, they have a great bullpen session, and then they get in there, and they can't They can't throw anything over the plate for strikes or consistently get people out. That's just the crazy thing about this. And so I think that what Baylor has to look at here, Stephen, is, again, when it comes to the portal, like I said a moment ago, it comes down to these two things. What is their NIL infrastructure going to look like in order to make themselves attractive to quarterback prospects? And again, you can check on the board all the candidates that we've discussed and that sort of thing. And then again, the other thing is, will this guy have a chance to compete for the starting job? Because I can tell you, guys like I mentioned, Luke Altmyer, let's just say for the sake of discussion, Tanner Mordecai were to change his mind about Wisconsin, if that's the way he's going and want to come back home. They're gonna when they talk to the Baylor coaches, they're gonna say, I want to compete for the starting job because I've had this history. That sort of thing. Or then you got Brennan Armstrong, the Virginia quarterback, who could be in play. That's another thing too. Again, these are guys that are experienced, know the college game, and they're not coming to wear a baseball cap and signal plays in from the sideline.
And as we talk about the portal, Baylor does have people in the portal. I personally thought Al Walcott leaving was probably the biggest portal that they had. The other guys I didn't think made a whole lot of difference. But Baylor's got six in the portal. They don't have near as many people in the portal as some of the other teams. What is kind of concerning is the area where they need people. That's what makes the portal so concerning right now.
I think, Al Walcott declaring and Devin Neal declaring were probably the two biggest stunners for the secondary, because that's where they need it. I mean, those are safeties that are gone, so they're going to have to replenish that and get guys ready for spring ball, unless they go to the portal and get guys out of the portal for that position, that sort of thing. So, I mean, it's going to come down to what do they really want to do in terms of trying to replenish that. Of course, we already knew that Kyron Drones was in the portal. I mean, there could be some discussions there. Did Baylor wait too long to react to Drones going into the portal? Because surely they knew a couple weeks in advance that when he officially announced that that's what was going to happen. It wasn't like they were caught off guard on that. But I do think that, the secondary issues that they're going to be dealing with, just from a depth perspective and experienced guys back there. Remember, Al Walcott had that brilliant pick six in the Sugar Bowl against Ole Miss. And those are guys that you really could depend on, and now they're gone. And, and again, I will say this now, obviously Neal's already signed with Louisville, so he's officially gone. Walcott could come back if college talks to him and brings him back. We'll have to wait and see how that all transpires. And maybe there's a chance that could be salvaged. But Baylor's going to have to look for some help in that position group for sure.
And it's one of the areas where college is getting more like NFL, in that you're like really rebuilding the team every year now. You don't, because Baylor's entire defensive secondary now is, hey, see ya, we're all new now, okay? And you don't have that time to spend 3 or 4 years teaching people into a system. You've got to get them out there and plug them in.
Well, I thought, even though it was Air Force and they don't throw a lot, but they throw, seven times against Baylor in the Armed Forces Bowl, I thought Tevin Williams, since obviously Lorando Johnson didn't play in the bowl game, I thought Tevin Williams played pretty decently in that spot. A.J. McCarty got beat again for the big like Air Force's helmet. But having said all that, that's where you're going to have to figure out how you want that to be restructured in the secondary. I mean, those are a lot of questions that Powell is probably, that's one of the first things he's going to do, is look at the tape of all the guys on this returning side of the defense, line to linebacker to secondary, to find out where do I need to put these guys to be the most successful.
And Baylor travels up to Ames, Iowa to play the Iowa State Cyclones in basketball, and this is the start of the real Big 12 basketball season, and the Big 12's really good this year. Baylor's really going to have to fight this one.
Yeah, it's a team that went 10-2 in the non-conference schedule. The losses were to Marquette, as well as Virginia. And obviously, I think maybe that they found a little bit of their prowess when they defeated Gonzaga in that game up in South Dakota, and they've won four straight. They had a good win over Nicholls State to kind of get things going. They turned it over a little bit too much, but again, that was an 8-day layoff. And now they're going to get into this you know, Tuesday, basically Tuesday, Saturday grind of the conference season. So they're going to get into that rhythm now so that they're going to have, you know, a little more steadiness, consistency to their schedule. And I think that'll matter. Now, of course, it still goes back to, you know, how this team is this team going to be ready? Because the one thing is going to be is I don't know if LJ Cryer will be available for this game in Ames on Saturday because he did not play on Wednesday night against Nicholls because if he was in the concussion protocol. So obviously something happened in the practice between the Northwestern State game and this one to indicate that something happened to him there, which is unfortunate. But, you know, Iowa State, you know, Baylor won there last year. It was a tight game. They found a way to pull it out in Ames. All these games with Iowa State have been good over the last couple of years. Baylor's won them. They've all been tight. Remember last year's game when Baylor wound up winning a share of the conference championship, the regular season championship at Kansas? That was a game where Iowa State came all the way back from like a 20-point deficit, actually got the lead, and then Baylor was able to, you know, get on the run here in the last 4 or 5 minutes to get on top of it and win it. But, you know, it's a team, Iowa State, that made the Sweet 16, very experienced group. And obviously with Baylor's issues in the front court, you know, Flo Thamba is going to have to be a little bit better. They're going to have to start getting more from Jalen Bridges in the front court as a slasher, that sort of thing. You know, and Ajuwanda, I don't know, and I'm not saying his last name right, but, you know, the true freshman big, I think he's been a good contributor for them coming off the bench. And I think that's going to be important for them to really just get something from the front court, because if your shots are not falling with Flagler, Keontae George, you know, and Langston Love, who's really been coming on here the last few weeks, you can be a guard-heavy offense, but you've got to get some productivity. So it'll be a great challenge for them. And, of course, TCU's ranked, so it's going to be a big grind of 18 games for sure. And it should be fun to watch. And if Baylor's going to try and win or share a third consecutive Big 12 championship, they will have definitely earned it. It's going to be a fun 2-plus months.
Yeah, and the thing about the Big 12 this season is that you could be a top 15 team and go 500 in conference in this conference.
Yeah, I think this conference is probably the best in the country. Obviously, Texas, despite its issues with Chris Beard, is still very talented, top 10 team. Kansas, number 4 in the nation, I think it is. So you've got two really strong programs there at the top. Now, Jerome Tang has done a great job in his first month plus there at Kansas State. Feel like things are going there. Tech's going to be a tough out there. TCU is what it is under Jamie Dixon. And so it's just going to be, you better bring it every week and every game for all 18, that's for sure. And I do think this conference will probably get about, you know, 6-7 teams into the tournament when they get to Selection Sunday in March.
Okay, so you want to close it out for us?
Sure. So we want to wish everyone a Happy New Year. We'll obviously keep following things on the NCAA quarterback transfer portal trail. I think, obviously, with the assistant coaches being named there, I think we're good there. We'll kind of start to get back into more of the ramping up things of recruiting, that sort of thing, as we move into next week. Obviously, we'll track the basketball team's conference opener at Ames on Saturday, and then, of course, the home opener against TCU next Wednesday. And we will talk to you all next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.